This is a HeadGum Original.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I sound weird in my own headphones.
You sound almost exactly like George Takei in my earphones.
I don't know really? Why, yeah. That's good.
This is all being documented from this point on.
From this point on, it's on the record.
I hate people. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow, what a scoop. I'm talking to my friend Bobby Moynihan. Bobby was on Saturday Night Live for 9 seasons, and the first time I ever met him, I learned that he had recommended me to Lorne Michaels as someone who should audition for the show. How did you know me at that point?
You're absolutely hilarious, and I had heard about it, and I just thought you were a funny dude.
Oh, okay. See, because I was the person who technically replaced you on the Stepfathers improv team.
Correct.
Only in the sense that you had left this improv team to when you got Saturday Night Live.
Do you ever leave an improv team, though?
No, not really. The audition itself never came to pass, but I always appreciated the compliment. And it does occur to me that in some alternate timeline where that audition actually happens and somehow goes well, maybe I get on the show and I last long enough to be a member of the cast when Tom Hanks is hosting. But I think in most timelines, I blow the audition and I do not join the cast. And who knows, maybe in one of them, I get fired the same week that Tom Hanks is hosting. Even when taking into consideration alternate timelines, with show business, it still mostly just means more opportunities to be rejected. You've heard you know what the premise of this podcast is, right? You know about my Band of Brothers story.
Yes. I know Tom from David Pumpkins, and he talked about you a lot.
It came up that week?
Well, he told me David Pumpkins was based on you.
But David Pumpkins has lively eyes.
That's what he said. He said he wanted to make sure it wasn't, he didn't have dead eyes. That's why he said, I'm going to do the opposite of that. But he said that that was the basis. He said that most of his work is based on that now.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
I'm Connor Ratliff. I'm an actor and comedian. 20 years ago, I was fired by Tom Hanks. I was told the reason was that he saw my audition tape and he thought that I had dead eyes. And that's the short version. Bobby has done a lot of very cool and impressive stuff because he is super talented and also super nice. People like working with him. That's why he pops up in all kinds of things. Monsters University.
This guy's a Sullivan? Like the famous Sullivan? I can't believe it. That is crazy.
Chet, calm down.
I'm sorry.
Secret Life of Pets movies, Sesame Street, Star Wars Resistance, DuckTales. I mean, when the Muppets perform live at the Hollywood Bowl, who did they want to be their special guest? Bobby Moynihan.
Okay, folks, this is a story you're gonna love to hear.
Good grief, the comedian's a bear!
Stop that!
What you said here!
Not that here!
What went here,
Bobby? Here!
Okay, well, how am I gonna know?
You'll know when you hear!
But, good grief, the comedian's a bear!
But among his credits, one of the most remarkable things he's been a part of is a sketch in his final season on SNL that blew up almost immediately and gave birth to one of the most iconic holiday characters of the 21st century. That's a pretty short list, so you probably know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about David S. Pumpkins.
How's it hanging? I'm David Pumpkins, and I'm gonna scare the hell out of you.
For those of you who haven't seen it, the premise of the sketch is that there's a haunted elevator ride, and every time the doors open, something terrifying appears. That is, until the doors open to reveal Tom Hanks as David Pumpkins, a man standing in between two dancing skeletons. There is nothing scary about David Pumpkins, and that's the whole joke.
Any questions?
this podcast, as you know, if there's a trajectory where we're inching closer to me interacting with Tom Hanks in some form, you're one of the closest in terms of degree, and you are, of course, one of the dancing skeletons.
Yes, I'm the larger one on the left.
What was that week like?
I enjoyed that week a great deal. It was in my last year on the show, and I remember it being hard. But what I remember the most is it was right before Trump got elected, and the cold open, and there was a pre-taped sketch that I think it was the dome. It was like about building a dome to live in because they were afraid Trump might get elected. But there were such downers.
Our nation, torn, broken. You could move to Canada, but you love your country. What can a person like you do?
What if there was a place where the unthinkable didn't happen and life could continue for progressive Americans just as before?
Now there is.
Welcome to The Bubble.
Coming in January 2017, The Bubble is a planned community of like-minded freethinkers and no one else.
Everything was like the cold open ended with like Kate as Hillary Clinton going like, well, hope this doesn't end terribly. And that was it. It was such a bummer that he might get elected, that David Pumpkins was like this weird, nonsensical thing, and I think people enjoyed it. And I remember seeing like that was the last moment of happiness before he got elected. I remember Mikey Day and Streeter and I talking about how we just wanted to write something that would get on the Halloween special every year. And we were talking about how there was no Santa for Halloween. But I just remember it was like 5 o'clock in the morning and the whole joke was that it made no sense. And that was what made us laugh, was that we were never going to explain who he was. There was a line in Dress that David Pumpkins, where Beck went, so is he like a Canadian Freddy Krueger? It was like we tried to explain it more, but it didn't work. It was just, the idea was just that it was insane and we just liked that it was weird. We also thought it was never getting on. Tom Hanks thought it was weird and didn't get it. The whole week was Tom being very not sure.
Right.
And in between Dress and Air, I believe it was, he said, Chris Hemsworth would make a fantastic David Pumpkins. Because Chris Hemsworth was hosting. He pitched another host, like as a joke, like trying to be funny. But one of my most vivid memories on SNL is that the second David Pumpkin started, I don't know why, I'd never had this at any other sketch. I went like, I have full remembrance of the entire sketch, of doing the entire sketch and feeling giggly and silly and being completely aware that we were making Tom Hanks slap our butts and how silly it was. And Tom Hanks turning to us and goes, what's next, butt slaps? And that moment of just him turning to us and honestly, as an actor, asking us, like, what comes next? The butt slaps?
The thing that really blew my mind is that I believe the voice, his voice as David S. Pumpkins,
mm-hmm.
was, like, one of the last things to click into place. Like, that he wasn't doing that voice.
No, but, like, who are you?
I'm David Pumpkins, man!
Okay, yeah, and David Pumpkins is...
his own thing!
Why are you a part of this ride?
To do this!
You know the weird hand thing and the voice?
Yeah.
All of that did not happen at Dress. He did it very differently.
So it was a thing that happened live.
I would go as far as saying the only time David Pumpkins happened when it was funny was live on air.
What's my name?
David S. Pumpkins.
Any questions?
Yes, several. I mean, what, he has a middle initial now? I am so...
That's just a comedy miracle, like that it could have easily been this forgotten thing and inspiration striking, like, right when you need it to.
That's it. I mean, he's the next day, that Sunday, was the premiere of Gods and Monsters, maybe? Some movie... What was the movie where he's got to figure out codes?
Inferno or Angels and Demons?
Angels and Demons. It was one of those movies, one of those series of movies was like the premiere was the next day.
The Robert Langdon Da Vinci Code series.
Correct. Yes, Da Vinci Code. Thank you.
And so at the premiere, people were asking him about David S. Pumpkins.
Well, it was like less than 24 hours later and people were going like, David Pumpkins. And like, you could see it in his face. Like he was just like, oh God, I can't believe it.
Tom, how much fun did you have on SNL? I mean, first of all, David S. Pumpkins is, you knocked it out the park. I mean, this thing has gone viral. People, it's sold out everywhere.
The costume is sold out from everywhere.
You have to dress up for that for Halloween.
But he said something in one of those interviews with like, sometimes you go on SNL and you think something's not going to work, and then on air it just works, and then you have to deal with that for the rest of your life.
I don't exactly understand it. I mean, literally on Friday, actually Saturday morning, the name David S. Pumpkins meant absolutely nothing to anyone.
The Golden Globes were this weekend, and David Pumpkins was in his package for the Cecil B. DeMille Award. It's ridiculous.
And there, I'll be David S. Pumpkins for the rest of my life now. Here lies David S. Pumpkins.
I started watching SNL during the, like, Kevin Nealon, Nora Dunn.
The bad boy era.
When Lorne came back and it was, like, the first cast that really clicked where it started, like, the second sort of Lorne era. When everything really started clicking, it was, like, Victoria Jackson and
Dana Carvey, Mike Myers,
Dennis Miller, and Phil Hartman. And during that era, I remember Tom Hanks was always one of my favorite hosts because there's a small handful of SNL hosts who never were cast members, but it feels like they were. It's almost like the Steve Martin template where it's like, because he had recurring characters as a host.
Mm-hmm.
He had the Mr. Short-Term Memory.
He's Mr. Short-Term Memory.
Tonight's episode, The Hospital.
Hey, Bill, I came as soon as I heard about your leg.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate that.
Appreciate what?
And there was the thing with him and John Lovitz where they were like catcalling women.
Hello. And goodbye.
Ooh, Steve Reich.
What? And I remember thinking, like, he's so perfect on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And despite that, I was still, like, despite him already being this kind of one of, you know, he's hosted like 9 times or something, it was still so surprising that there was something as impactful as David S. Pumpkins that late in the game, hosting-wise. You know, because a lot of times they're long-term hosts, but they don't necessarily, like, spark a new thing once they've hosted that many times.
One of the things I talk about most whenever David Pumpkins comes up is why. I mean, like, I think it's funny that, like, people go, why David Pumpkins? And I go, well, that's the whole thing.
Yeah. Embrace the mystery.
Mikey Day is responsible for a lot of those things. I mean, like, Mikey Day was prolific at SNL like John Mulaney was. Like, sometimes, like, I mean, Mikey Day, we wrote that David Pumpkins thing together. He's responsible for Matt the Radar Technician. Like, there was a lot of things that Mikey did. He did The Grouch. You know, him and Streeter just kind of hit the ground running, and they do a good job at those at those ones that just take off.
Have you talked to Tom since David S. Pumpkins?
Yes. His wife, Rita, played my mother in a movie, or my mother-in-law, in a movie called Brother Nature with Taron Killam. And we got along super well. We used to text about nachos a lot. And she was super, super nice. And they've always been very nice to me. And Tom was super nice to me. Tom. Thomas Hanks. He was always very nice to me at SNL, and I truly think David Pumpkins was one of those weird things that he just got saddled with, and I don't know, like, I mean, like, the reason David Pumpkins is what it is because it was at a weird time, and because Lorne gave Tom Hanks the note of, like, just go be stupid. Like, just go, it doesn't matter, so even if it fails, like, you know, like, just go have a good time. Like, you're overthinking it, kind of. I think he just went, like, maybe just go out there and do whatever you want. And, like, he did, and that's what makes it so silly and fun.
It's such a great note, because that sketch, as great as it is one of those that a few inches in either direction and it's not a hit.
No.
You know what I mean? It's so close to not being good.
Yes.
That sketch is Luke Skywalker firing those two things into the one spot of the Death Star that can blow up. If he doesn't do that voice and he doesn't do those hand gestures and he doesn't have that expression on his face,
it was much more cocky.
Yeah.
David Pumpkins was like cockier and like now he's just a big old dummy who's having a good time. But and then at the end is actually genuinely scary. And all the stuff with the skeletons is bizarre for no reason. They say eye poppy. It makes no sense.
And the eye poppy thing, I think that comes in fairly late in the sketch. Like you can't believe there's still new information.
Also, another between dress and air change. Completely just to be weird.
Which is what live TV should be. I mean, that's the thing that people are often kind of scared of, you know, what could go wrong. But that's such a great example of something going so right. And it's also, you're right, there's such a limited number of characters or even slots available for any given holiday. And what's so funny about that one is that the joke of it is, who is this guy? And that's exactly the thing that ended up making him probably the most significant Halloween character now.
It's funny to me. It's also funny to me to see people dressed up as him and also to go into a Halloween store and see David Pumpkins and licensed David Pumpkins and Beat Boy skeleton costumes. It makes me laugh.
I remember you were kind enough to in your last season, to invite me to come watch an SNL taping and gave me the tour backstage. And as it happened, it was a week when you didn't get on into any sketches.
Yeah, I had that happen a lot in my last year.
Where there were things that just like got cut at dress. And then as the cards you were dealt that week were just none of those sketches made it onto air. And I remember thinking, you were so nice as you were taking me around and showing me all the little nooks and crannies at 8H.
I got good at that tour.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
It was really fun. How many people did you sneak into Lauren's office with?
Not many. Maybe two or three.
I remember the door was open. We didn't break in. We didn't do anything wrong.
No.
But you were going to see if he was there, and there was no one there. And I remember thinking, I think I may have even said it. We got to get out of here.
Yeah, I think so too.
I remember being more terrified in that moment than I have been maybe in any moment since I moved to New York. Like if someone asked me, when are times you've been scared in New York City? I remember, well, there was one time on the subway and there was that one time when Bobby and I found ourselves in Lorne Michaels' office and we weren't supposed to be there.
I wanted to show you his bathroom. I think I showed you his bathroom, right?
But I was like, Bobby, we got to get out of here. I have nothing to gain from this and everything to lose.
It felt very naughty. It definitely felt naughty.
Dead Eyes will be right back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
In the first episode of this podcast, I told the story of my firing from Band of Brothers, but I didn't tell you the whole story. There are a handful of things that I left out. Tangents and side stories, preludes and epilogues, things that would have made the initial telling of the tale too complicated. Parts I felt would work better if I stripped them out and told them separately. And one of those things is a part of the story that happened over a year later when Band of Brothers finally aired on HBO. I was feeling pretty sorry for myself in the run-up to the premiere when the promotional campaign for the miniseries was everywhere. It was just massive. Commercials on TV all the time. You couldn't pick up a magazine or a newspaper without seeing a full-page ad for it. And people were excited. It was a really big deal. And as I sat down to watch the two-hour premiere, I remember thinking to myself, this is the worst thing that has ever happened to me. How am I going to make it through the next 9 weeks when all anybody in America is going to be talking about is Band of Brothers? And that was Sunday, September 9th, 2001. It goes without saying that while Band of Brothers was well-reviewed and popular, and it would go on to win tons of awards, it was not the main topic of conversation in the autumn of 2001. I remember thinking, like, if there was ever a, we pull back to a wide shot of reality, it was so eye-opening to me that I was like, my God, what have I been doing wallowing in this, you know, it was a very small part in a very big show. I just remember thinking, like, this is not such a big deal. of the, you know, many lessons learned by the one of the most horrible things that's happened in America ever, it was one of those things where I was like, I remember watching the rest of the series as it aired. And by the time it got to my episode, you know, we were, you know, the planes were flying again, but there was like anthrax being sent to NBC. And, you know, my problems really felt... I was living in Oregon at the time, and I remember thinking, like, well, there are bigger things to feel bad about and more things to feel good about in my own life. That was really the – it was a real, like, rip the Band-Aid off kind of moment in terms of, like, okay, I need to, like, get on with my life and not feel bad about this anymore, you know?
Yeah, I'm going through that now when I think back at my 9 years on SNL and how many, for nine years, how many things I made so important that mean absolutely nothing.
No. Right.
Life or death, you know, making it a life or death situation, and it meant nothing.
All you have to do is if you ever have... even come close to observing any actual life or death situation, yeah. You're suddenly like, oh, right, of course, this is, why am I getting so upset? How do you take show business disappointments, Bobby? Do you handle them well or poorly?
I handle them uniquely personally, I think. Is that whatever? I feel like I have lost some jobs that I should care more about, or like I auditioned for something. Like I definitely auditioned for Olaf and Frozen, and that just makes me laugh. Uh-huh. Like I didn't get that. Like, you know, but like it doesn't make me mad, but like what does make me mad is I auditioned for in the new and was super close to getting cast, and then backed out. He was going to be I don't even know if this is allowed to say, but like, and then it wasn't me, it was somebody else, because they went a different direction, and I was like, I'm still mad about that. I'm as a fan, I'm just still angry. That one gets me really bad, and like that's the silliest thing to be mad about.
The great thing is, if it turns out we're not allowed to use you saying that, it still would be entertaining to me if we bleeped all the important details and just heard, I'm still
Please
mad.
Please do that. Yeah, there's a couple little ones like that, like a lot of cartoon stuff, like a lot of like cartoons that like I came close to getting, or I was playing like an iconic cartoon character and it went away. I got cast as Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, wow.
In a new Winnie the Pooh series, and it went away, and I was very devastated because I just thought that was like a cool thing.
When you find out that you don't have something, like when you find out that you've lost something, how do you just learn that news from your reps? Do they just say like, this is happening or this isn't happening?
I feel like you often just never hear, or the most common way is you just see the casting announcement for the person who got it.
Ah, that's interesting that still happens.
Oh yeah.
Part of me was hoping that as you rise in status, that there be you know, there.
But there's no such thing as that. I mean, like, unless you're like Kevin Hart or like somebody who reaches that stratospheric. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm being silly, but like, I love when people go like, "Do you still audition for stuff?" And it's like, I was on SNL for 9 years. It doesn't matter. Like, yeah. Like it's like it's all relative.
I had an audition for a thing yesterday, and I don't think I'm going to get it. But I don't know if you've ever seen this or have had this happen to you. But I remember there was one time when I went on an audition for a commercial, and they sometimes give you the ad campaign, like the lookbook sort of is in the materials where it's like them pitching what the ad campaign is going to be. But every now and then they'll put in actors on the audition materials saying like, we want a Ben Schwartz type. And they'll have a picture of him mocked up in the artwork.
Amazing.
Like, this is what we want. I remember one time I texted, I think, Ben Schwartz a picture of it saying like, hey, they're looking for you on this if you're, you know.
Well, isn't the famous story Chris Gethard went to an audition that said a Chris Gethard type and he didn't get the part?
Yeah, I think that's what's about to happen to me because I received the audition materials, and on these audition materials, they had a number of improvisers' photos, including a couple of people I know, but my photo was among them. And then there was a bit of text saying some very nice things about me. And then I went in for the audition, and I kind of felt like the audition didn't go very well. And I thought, like, I think I
did. You say that's me on the audition material?
No, I didn't. I felt too awkward. I didn't want to point to it and say, like,
How does that happen? Like, how does that happen?
Being in the waiting room for the audition, knowing that everyone there was sent a picture of me with text saying, this is the kind of person we're looking for. It psyched me out. It got in my head. I went into the audition thinking, like, I can only lose. Like, I can't live up to what they wrote about me.
It's always true. That was SNL in a nutshell. You're only as good as your last show.
One thing I worry about doing this podcast is...
being too great?
I worry that there will be a time... Well, it's just like I do it. I do the George Lucas talk show where I pretend to be George Lucas. And I know that word, in some level, has probably gotten to him... that there's somebody who does this thing.
Yeah, I believe I've spoken to his son, Jet, about it.
I would hate to think that there would be any part of him that would feel bad about it. And I worry about with this podcast, I know it's a matter of time before somebody mentions it to Tom Hanks. Hey, there's a podcast about you firing a guy.
Yeah.
And I worry that, like, if I heard that, if I was him, I'd be like, oh, no. A podcast? I worry that he'll feel bad or he'll feel mad or like if we assume that like all he knows of me is that he saw my audition tape and he didn't like it. Well, this isn't going to make him like me more, or maybe it is. I want it to be a thing that makes him like me more.
I truly believe this. I would say this documented on a podcast. I feel like Tom Hanks is the kind of guy that would go, wait, what? And then do his due diligence, figure out and go, oh, my gosh, I remember that guy. And yeah. Then find out that you're a funny guy who's a respected comedian and be like, good for him. And then he would eventually do the show. That's my guess. I could be completely wrong. This is from knowing him for a combined of 11 minutes.
And my hope is that his first reaction would be like, oh, no, this is bad news. And that further investigation will turn up that – in my telling of this story, I am not casting him as a villain, even though there have been times in my life where I felt hurt or upset. The point of this podcast is about how weird and complicated and hard show business can be and how sometimes you're collateral damage. Sometimes you're just the guy whose eyes didn't look right on the tape and you had to go, buddy.
Yeah. I've definitely been that. I mean, I think I've been that guy. And God, I was in the movie Neighbors. I was in that movie. It was like the first movie that I did where I felt like, oh, God, this is like a cool Seth Rogen movie that I'm going to get to be in. And I had a scene. There was a couple flashbacks of like the first guys who ever did beer pong, and it was like the workaholics guys.
Yeah.
And it was like the first guy to invent the term boot and rally to throw up and then start drinking again, and it was like Jake Johnson. And then like the Lonely Island were like the first guys to ever have a toga party. And it was like during a flashback sequence for like college stuff. And then it was me and Nathan Fielder, and we were the who I believe went to high school with Seth Rogen. I believe they knew each other from high school. And I think we were the first – the joke was we were the first people to ever have a wet T-shirt contest at a college party. And it's on the DVD, but we were cut from the movie. And I truly – I blame Justin Bieber because Justin Bieber hosted SNL the week before, and it was such a experience that I was out of my head. And when I showed up on that set, they were like, "How's everything?" And I feel like I was I feel like I was a little much. I feel like I was a little much on set, and I don't know if that's why we got cut or not, but like I truly believe, cuz Nathan Fielder, I remember going like, "Well, he's best friends with Seth. They're never going to cut this." Like, they grew up together, and I think that they were like, "Oh, God, he was so annoying that day that let's just cut that part. We don't need that."
You were complaining?
I was excited. I was overexcited, overstimulated. I was kind of excited to be in, like, a Seth Rogen movie, like, that he wanted me to be in his movie. And there was dancing involved, so we had, like, a dancing rehearsal before, and I weirdly enjoy that. So I was, like, all hyped up. And, like, when I came on set, I just remember there was a lot of, like, "Whoa, like, slow down, pal." Like,
right.
Like, and I think I was too much that day. I think I was too much Bobby Moynihan for them that day. I truly believe that.
But it wasn't your fault. It was Justin's.
No, now I'm going to therapy and I'm okay with it. But like at that time, I was like, "Oh boy."
Yeah.
That was a lot that day. I think I got myself taken out of that movie.
Thinking back to that alternate timeline where Bobby recommends me for SNL and I get to be on the show. Just because your dreams come true, it doesn't mean that you get everything you want. I could just as easily end up where Bobby often did, you know, having all my sketches in that week's episode cut. All I get to do is wave at the audience on the stage at the very end while the closing credits scroll by. But maybe in one alternate timeline, there are three dancing skeletons in the David Pumpkin sketch, and one of them is me. And when they cut to commercial, Tom Hanks turns to me, not realizing that we have a history together, and he says, "You have the deadest eyes I've ever seen, and they are perfect for a dancing skeleton." We'll be back next week. Any questions? On the next episode of Dead Eyes, I'll be talking with Academy Award-nominated singer-songwriter Amy Mann, who unknowingly provided the musical soundtrack for my entire Band of Brothers experience.
Yeah, that record has a lot of songs of disappointment.
I remember using your record to wallow.
That's what it's there for.
Yeah.
It's a good use of it.
Dead Eyes is a production of HeadGum Studios. It was created by me, Connor Ratliff. It's written by me, and it's mostly me that you hear talking, including now. The show is produced and edited by Harry Nelson and Mike Comite. Special thanks to my guest, Bobby Moynihan. If you like Dead Eyes, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Twitter at Dead Eyes Podcast, and talk about us on social media. Please tell your friends about this show, especially if you're friends with Tom Hanks, whose performance in the Coen Brothers film The Lady Killers is perhaps his most underrated work, I think. I was not in the right headspace the first time I saw this movie, but I think there's a direct line between what may be the goofiest character he has played in a feature film and the exact qualities that turned David S. Pumpkins into a cultural phenomenon. It's worth revisiting. You can tell him I said that. Thanks for listening.
I can't do it. I can't conceive. You're everything you're trying to make me believe. Cause then
was a HeadGum original.